Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Mars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast Half Full Editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Weinkert.
Happy New Year, Noah.
Happy New Year to you, Dave. Feel like the new year is barely started, but 2018 seems like it is months and months and months.
Doesn't it, though?
I mean, I can't even remember 2018.
Everybody's happy about that.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, for the best. Not one of our better years, but you know.
And it's ups and it's downs.
Yeah, that's true.
We covered it in our last episode, and as is sort of the New Year's tradition for, I guess, magazines and podcasts, to look at what 2019 perhaps holds for us.
Well, it looks like an onion.
The year or the glass?
The glass.
Oh.
You know, mine's a Gibson, so...
All right. I thought that was some kind of, like...
No metaphor. I look into a crystal martini glass, and I expect to see an onion.
Yes, at the bottom.
At the bottom.
Well, maybe that's the reward. Maybe that's 2019 at the end.
Yeah, a little pickled onion.
Exactly. There'll be a delicious pickled onion for all of us.
You could do worse.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, before we leave officially 2018 behind, I think it would be kind of cool to look at some of the stuff that recently came out about drinking habits. Just the other day, IWSR, which tracks all this drinking data, I'm not exactly sure how they...
What is it, International Wine and Spirits Review or something?
I think that is actually correct. I'm not sure.
Well, let's just call it the IWSR and move on.
They never actually say what they stand for, but yeah. I guess we'll just call it IWSR.
Yeah.
But they, you know, sort of released their 2018 numbers for America, and I mean, nothing was... too surprising, but
we're drinking more, right?
We are drinking more, but well, I mean, yes and no, right? So
less beer.
I mean, it's still a big category,
right?
But people are drinking less beer, but they're drinking
more hard stuff,
more craft beer, and they're drinking more hard stuff. I mean, that's...
I can't imagine why.
it is true that according to them anyway, is not my experience, but that spirits and wine are growing, but it's growing at a slower rate than it used to be growing.
Mm-hmm.
And they maybe think it's wellness or health. I might even chalk it up, to be honest, to the expense, right? Like all of these spirit brands, everybody's trying to get ever more, you know, premium. The price of
a
cocktail is going up. The price of, you know, spirits is going up. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe people are just buying, you know, they're buying a better bottle, but they're only buying one bottle instead of two bottles. You know, I can't blame them.
I think it's foolish. But no, I'm kidding. But, you know, in tough times, you want cheap booze.
Yeah. And 20 years of year-over-year growth, essentially.
So. Yeah, it might be slowing because it's reached a certain saturation.
Exactly, or this is the new, you know, growth rate.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the other, you know...
Well, the cocktail trend is starting to become normalized, so it's not it's not as exciting as it was.
True, in most major markets, but I think in some of the...
Oh, it's still spreading,
And the quality of stuff that I see... You know, and all over, you know, no matter, you know, I was in a, I don't know, like, it was sort of a weird upscale triple restaurant in Nashville a couple months ago, where one side was like Indian food, one side was like Chinese food, and then one side was like Southern food.
Like, okay.
It's like three restaurants joined together, which is kind of cool. And you could just go, you could have one course in each.
Could you mix and match?
I don't think you can order off. You literally have to go from dining room to dining room. That was really cool. And I love the concept. The food I thought was actually very good. And what was kind of awesome was that the bars were also different in each of the restaurants, but they all stocked really high-end stuff. You know, a bunch of the Pierre Ferrand stuff was there, you know, the Stiggins pineapple rum, which is a favorite of mine, and obviously you helped give some info on creating that one, which is a pretty...
I pushed them to do it for reasons of my own.
Right.
I like Charles Dickens, basically, and it's out of Charles Dickens. So.
And it's a delicious, delicious rum, but I kind of shocked to see it behind the bar at this place. That was just like, and that kind of thing happens more.
We're seeing more of that. You're right. Yeah. We're seeing, and I think we'll continue to see sort of a hybridization between high end bars and restaurants. Where you, the most successful places I've been to lately, it's like cocktail bars plus good food.
Yeah.
Where they don't have to offer a full restaurant menu.
Exactly.
But they have a good chef.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just sliders and sandwiches.
Yeah.
It's actual food. At the same time, they don't have the full dining room with the extensive menu and all the expenses that go with that. They can offer a more limited menu and have the cocktails be more of the focus. And those places are quite successful. They seem to work really well.
And I think it's one of these things as real estate gets ever higher in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, L.A. I mean, I interviewed Tom Colicchio a few years ago, and you know, he was talking about how a lot of restaurants he thought would probably leave the first floor, right? They wouldn't be able to afford the first floor anymore, that they would go to the basement level or they go on a higher floor,
upstairs.
Kind of like Tokyo. That's a... You know, a lot of restaurants there. And I think for bars, it's the same thing. And
it'd be like in Tokyo, where you walk into like an 8-story commercial building, go to the elevator, push the 6th floor, go to the door in the back, and walk in, and there's your bar. I mean, those are nuts. I kind of like it, but it's also kind of a shame.
Oh yeah, and I think you know, even since we taped our last podcast, we heard about even more famous New York bars closing. Like, the Flatiron Lounge, which, I mean, really meant, I mean, an incredible
That was revolutionary.
Both of us.
Yeah.
I mean, I really learned how to drink there, to be honest, because it was the first cocktail bar that I knew of, really, and that, you know, that was my spot.
That was the one that kind of closed the first wave, of the cocktail bars here, of the modern cocktail bars.
Like, the book party for Imbibe was there.
That's
Or Punch.
Imbibe, my first big cocktail book.
And then I think we did the after party at Toby's Bar.
Yeah, we did.
And there's a big
passerby.
A big punch of, the Pittsburgh punch.
The Philadelphia one, Fish House Punch?
Yeah, Fish House Punch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Which was, I think, the first time that I actually ever had Fish House Punch.
It's very good.
I had several cups of that.
It's dangerous.
I almost fell into one of the art installations.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with having art in your bar.
That's true. Or a bar in a gallery.
Yeah.
But I do think as real estate has gotten more expensive, that we'll see also more bars serving, you know, working as kind of cafes, right? Or, you know, during opening earlier.
Trying to at least get some revenue during the day, which is otherwise quiet time.
Yeah, that's or serving some food without having to put in a full kitchen, but just something to augment, you know, revenue stream. So I think that's something that'll become more common. And
it's an interesting model, and this kind of hybrid model, and seems to take the best of both if it's done well.
Yeah.
But right now, it's sort of the smartest people who are doing it. Once it expands, I think we're going to see a lot of bad ones.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of you know, both, I think, old bars, some of them doing that, like our friend Xingjin Frizzell at Fort Defiance.
That's exactly.
Part of his.
Yeah, it's a bar restaurant, and they both are kind of have equal weight.
And then even some of the new bars that have just opened, like our friend Claire Sprouse just opened a new bar called Hunky Dory. And I think even it opened early so that she could sort of start it as a cafe, and then the cocktails will come later in Brooklyn.
And I think of like Ticonderoga Club in Atlanta is a great example.
Yeah.
You know, where they've got a real chef.
Yeah.
The menu is limited. The drinks are amazing, and the bartenders can see every seat in the room. You know, it's not large.
It's funny because I think,
except for the upstairs.
I think it's funny because years ago we saw restaurants kind of do that, right, where they would have you know, a small menu where they'd be using like toaster ovens, like our friend Zach Palacio.
Yeah, that Chicken Bone Cafe. Right, exactly. That was a long time ago. That was, an early example of this genre, as a matter of fact.
And that was more, you know, restaurants sort of shrinking their footprint.
Yeah,
but still having cocktails and spirits.
And this is kind of coming from the bar side,
right? And sort of flip it over where the cocktails and spirits are like where the focus is. But having a limited amount of
Food, but like real you know modern food that people will pay money for.
Exactly.
Another example, of course, is Leyenda in Brooklyn, which has great food.
Yeah.
And also you know amazing drinks.
And one of your locals near your house.
Yeah, exactly. Clover Club, the same.
Right.
Started off as a cocktail bar, and then realized it had to be more than that. It had to serve brunch. They had to have a real food for people for the neighborhood because it was a neighborhood that looked for that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And those are ways to build regulars.
Yeah.
You know, this is as the cocktail bar movement sort of expands and becomes taken for granted, the bars that are smart who are in it for the long haul are going to be looking for ways to build regulars.
Absolutely.
Rather than to make their bar a novelty.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're going to see more of in 2019 is bars working on that strategy of building up your regulars, of getting people to come back, of maybe offering more services to people than just a glamorous place to occasionally have a nice drink.
And I think some of the IWSR, for some reason I can't ever say it right, their data also sort of bears that out, right? I mean, we have, you know, according to them, like in 2018, we saw a big push in Mezcal. And I think part of that, I mean, obviously, small base, so any gain seems huge. I mean, we saw that with Rye Whiskey a couple of years ago, went from literally
it was
zero to like you know
20% growth a year, but 20% of not much. Yeah,
but those types of things, I think a lot of that is driven by people, customers trusting their bartender, right? Saying where the bartender says, "Hey, I just tried this crazy thing. I think you might like it," and the person says, "Okay, like sounds good. Like I trust you."
Yeah, and I see 8 bottles of it behind you on the bar. So,
But it's one of those things without that kind of regular status that you know.
Yeah, it doesn't have the advertising. It's not an advertising category.
It's people, drinkers becoming more educated, bartenders becoming more educated, drinkers.
Well, this is how spreads in how stuff spreads in the modern world is less through advertising, which people are very cynical about, and I think more through. Through online, you know, modeling
And I think really education.
And education, real world influence.
Brandy and cognac seem to be going back up. Whiskey, tequila. I mean, you know, all old friends of ours.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's nice.
Yeah, I went to high school with all those guys.
It's nice to see that they're doing well and they're prospering after tough years for a lot of them. So
I'm glad to see cognac up.
You
know, that's a lovely spirit that has kind of been struggling to find its place in the cocktail bar.
Yeah.
The French are getting a little more canny about this.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a while there, they were, no, cognac is the luxury spirit. Right. You know, you drink it in a snifter to celebrate an extraordinary occasion. That's not great for emptying cases.
And for a few years, they really kind of forgot about the American market in favor of Asia.
Where,
I mean, obviously, it was such a big seller there, and I think it was a Chinese government that had cracked down on gifting, and that hurt the cognac brands very hard. And then they're like, "Oh yeah, we have another market called America.
Yeah,
like maybe we should give them some more love and like introduce new products and you know do you know education in America." Like, and I think it's actually worked because since that downturn in China, they've returned their efforts to America. It's definitely borne fruit.
I think you're right about that. Also, but also. You know, there's been a change in cognac regulations in terms of age.
Yeah.
And they've upped the age requirements. So VSOP has to be a minimum of 6 years. XO, a minimum of 10. That's going to actually, I think, help sales in the long term because you're going to really taste where your money is going. It makes a big difference. When you've got a better aged product on the market, I think that's going to help too.
Well, for some other good news, I think for 2019, obviously Tales of the Cocktail, big shakeup there last year, seems to be, you know, found their footing in the last 12 months or so. I think it was almost exactly a year that the new executive team of Caroline Rosen and then Neil from Cure.
Yeah, Neil Bodenheimer.
And the Solomon family stepped in, bought it, made it a real or authentic charity. And, you know, really the goal is to, you know, give back to both New Orleans, that community, and also the bartending community. And, you know, they've already done a lot of steps, which, you know, have impressed me. And they're going to be... What Tales on the Road is in March in Puerto
Rico.
That's
right, yeah, March 10th through 13th.
Which is kind of, I think, a really nice gesture. You know, as a country, we've done so little to help Puerto Rico.
I know. It's criminal.
It's really very sad. So, I mean, this is at least something, you know, that our community can do to help their community. And obviously people in New Orleans know what the devastation of a hurricane can do. So,
it's an act of empathy. It's nice as such.
Yeah, and tying those two communities together. So that will be in early March. You're speaking on a
I'll be speaking, panel. Yeah, that's right. And it's in Old San Juan, which is absolutely lovely. One of the coolest communities under American government.
Not very hard to get Dave to go to Old San Juan.
No, hell no. I love it down there. It's beautiful. You know, it's a beautiful old Spanish city. Yeah. I mean, the rest of San Juan's great, too, but Old San Juan is really kind of special because of the architecture,
for sure.
And it's this lovely old Spanish city, and it's got some spectacular bars.
Yeah.
I mean, La Factoria there is one of the best new American bars, hands down.
Yeah.
El Bate is a classic old dive bar. Hunter Thompson used to drink it there. You know, it's everybody used to drink there. Yeah. It's got... a lot of history. There's a bunch of other really nice ones. El Farolito, a lovely bar.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I think it's kind of funny. It's like Havana gets so, you know, mythologized, we can't go. We couldn't go there for so long, right?
Right?
Like it was so that it became this forbidden fruit that, you know, with every passing year, you know, was better. And that, not taking anything away from Havana, but you know, Puerto Rico, we could always go to, and I think we've taken, you know, for granted.
Puerto Rico also had a huge hit in Prohibition, because it applied there too.
And
any old cafes and bars had to start anew afterwards. Yeah. So that sort of took some of the wind out of their sails. Yeah. But they do have some old bars, and they have some really, really lovely bars. And
it's close.
You can go. There are plenty of bars that have air conditioning and Bud Light.
Right.
You can avoid those really easily. There are others.
I find that strangely around the world.
But yeah, I know. It's amazing.
Yeah. Why should there be any different?
Yeah, and widescreen TV and everything. Right. But there are others that are really traditional Caribbean bars, very Spanish, and really quite lovely, and a real pleasure to hang out at.
And then Tales will obviously be back in New Orleans in July. Very promising. I think some of those who took a sabbatical year last year will be back in full force.
I will be back in full force.
I wasn't going to call you out, but Dave will be back, as well as a lot of people.
Regulars. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
I think
I needed a year off.
Pretty and well deserved after many years in the Tales trenches. Yeah. This will be my 11th straight year. So that's
I did 12 straight years, and then a year even before that, and then towards the end there, I was averaging about 11 speaking gigs each Tales. That's too many,
right?
So I'm gonna
over like we're talking about
4 days,
right? Basically,
yeah. Like, so okay, it's
Wednesday
plenty
to Saturday.
Yeah, so, it's at least three a day usually, something like that. So I'm going to try to take it a little easier. And
I meant that Dave only means like, you know, seven speaking.
Yeah, exactly.
Over 4 days, so you'll get to see plenty of
more time in bars, less time on stage.
Right.
That's
your resolution.
It should be everybody's resolution who's in the entertainment business.
Fair enough. I think there's plenty of other events coming up for 2019.
Oh, yeah.
Our calendars are already filling up in a horrifically fast I thought that there would be some letdown in December, and then I thought there'd be some letdown in January. It doesn't appear that...
People still like to drink, Noah.
I'm glad for that.
I'm glad for that.
I'm very glad for that.
One thing I'm starting to see that's very interesting to me is rum is starting to shake off its sort of globalization and rediscover terroirs and individual traditions that have sort of been blended together by marketing over the last 50 years.
Every year for the last probably 5 to 10 years, somebody has said this, but now it feels like it actually...
Yeah, they said it as a brand thing, right. You know, the brand.
Right.
But they didn't say it. What's happening now is you're starting to see individual geographical traditions reassert themselves. Like pot still Jamaican rum. Jamaica was always pot still country.
Right.
For the last 40 years, they've been selling mostly blended rum. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just not different. The original Jamaican tradition. Yeah. But hipsters now are starting to have total demand for real pot still Jamaican rums.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see more of that coming to market because there is demand to it.
We just ran a story by our friend and colleague Wayne Curtis about the use of Tejona wheels in Mexico to
make
tequila. And the same idea that hipsters, millennials, to be honest, I think all drinkers are, these kind of buzzwords, whether it's pot still or Tejona wheel, which is a giant volcanic stone that's used to crush.
Yeah, it rolls around and crushes.
Agave, which is the most, Sisyphus-like task I've ever seen in my life, but somehow worked.
So they made you push the stone when you were down there, didn't they?
That would be amazing. I just got back.
Roll away the stone.
4,000-pound stone, I guess. Crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a crazy process. OSHA, I don't think, would ever approve it in America. But
no.
Wayne makes the point, like we just did, that all of these things, pot still, open fermenters, are things that drinkers are now looking for.
I think you're right. It's not just rum. It is cross-category, and it is the new sort of more educated drinkers are looking for production. You know, they don't want a nice label. They want to how is this thing made? And they're starting to geek out about that, which is interesting.
And where a few years ago brands got into a lot of trouble saying we're handmade or authentic, and that's, some of them were more handmade than others.
Yes.
So without getting into more naming names, I think most of those lawsuits were thrown out. But the point is that I think on labels they've been replaced with, instead of saying handmade, they're using actual terminology.
Yeah.
And people who have it are now crowing about it.
I mean, some of these rum labels I've seen recently are we use these marks, Plantation is doing this, Hampton now from Maison and Velier, saying, we use these marks, and this is what's in our bottle. Gallo people have launched this new line of California brandies that have the exact blend bill on the back. Nobody's ever done that before. It tells you what percentages of the different blending components are in there. Was this brandy pot stilled or column stilled? What varietal of grape? How long was it aged? That's revolutionary. These are big companies.
Really scalable. And some of the stuff they've been doing all along, but they just never thought... Like Patron Tequila has, I think, 10 Tejona wheels, which for a long time was more Tejonas than all the other brands combined, right? And most of the Tejonas were in museums, and they were using it. They never really
cared.
And now people obviously care. So that's, which is a good thing. I mean, I think it's the evolution.
It is. It's going to lead to some excesses, I suspect. Sure. But on the other hand,
drinking excesses.
I mean, people become being jerks about everything.
Okay,
usual.
Whether it's rum or tequila or
whiskey. even say Budweiser's listing their ingredients now for reasons of their own that we don't need to go into.
Right.
We could scratch our heads a little, but
I do think that we're going to see more transparency. You're right. Whether it's beer or it's spirits or wine,
Well, I mean, I think this is good because the people who are actually doing things like with real craft.
Right.
have a certain leg up. You know, you can't take it away from them.
And I think the talk should be not about small versus large producers, but really, because you could be small and really phoning it in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So the you know, the issue is not I'm a small distiller versus a big distiller,
right,
but it's more how are you distilling?
Yeah. I mean, people, I think of like Irish distillers, right, still uses huge pot stills.
Right.
Their single pot still stuff is locally grown grain, right, and, you know, and it goes into these huge pot stills.
Crafting,
yeah, and then it's put in barrels, right, in warehouses, right, for lots of years.
Right.
I don't know what more you want. You know, that's what I want.
Well, but I think it's good that the debate is moving towards these actual questions of just, you know, people being, I don't know, sizist. I mean, I don't know if you could use that.
Yeah, no, I've always resisted that because some of the, you know, like, you know, you take you know, a gin like, say, Tanqueray, which is made with four botanicals,
Is that a new brand?
Yeah. It's got a lot of hipster marketing. Great. It's got a cool green bottle. Right. You know, four botanicals, same as it always used.
Right.
It gets the best botanicals because they use the most.
Yeah.
And, you know, uses neutral grain spirit like gin is used since the late 1800s at least, and is made, you know, with consummate care. If you have a system that can write that off, there's something wrong with your system. You know, it's like.
And I think the sad news for 2019 is that we'll probably see a correction in the craft distilling industry where some of these, you know, startups and upstarts are going to disappear because, I mean, it's a tough business.
It is.
If you weren't the first distillery in your city or in your state since Prohibition, which a lot of the, like, you know, the first generation claim, and those are some of the most successful startups, like, you know, the Stranahans, the Tuttletowns of the world, it's very hard to compete against all the other small and large distilleries.
Yeah, especially if you're just making the same stuff everybody else is making.
And it's not
in
great.
The same way.
Or
yeah,
exactly. You're buying it, and now you're trying to make it, and you don't.
And
you
it's not tasting the same as when you bought it.
Right, and it's, I mean, it's, look.
It's not easy, you know. No. True craft is not easy.
Yeah.
The people, the distillers I know who are true crafts people have been working a long time at this and have been always improving their product.
Yeah.
Every, you know, it's never the same year to year because it's better.
Right.
And there are other people who just, they said, we're just going to sell this, whatever it is. And
or it's, you know, it's a capital intensive business, right?
It is.
It's hard to keep that up. And then a lot of people, the emphasis, I mean, I hate to say to somebody who wrote a book about label art, but a lot of was on how it looked, right?
Right.
The bottle, the beautiful,
right.
You know, buy, you know, getting a, you know, a custom bottle, a beautiful label, creating
cool
a
name,
cool
you know,
name, cool tasting room,
right?
And like the last consideration was, oh yeah, what does this taste like?
And then,
unfortunately,
those people are not. Some of them are not long for the business.
Right.
Others are very good business people,
and that will become
That will become clear. What I worry about is the people like the Leopold brothers, who are really intensely devoted to craft.
Yeah.
And now we've got tariffs in Europe on American whiskey.
Yeah.
And that's going to hurt a lot of these people.
That was the one outlet, right? Like, so that, you know, you might, you know, you have a gin, right, in Brooklyn, and there are now 35 other people making gin.
Right.
Well, the one market that is thirsty for Brooklyn gin is France, right?
Exactly.
Or London, or, you know, England.
Where it's cool, it's got cachet.
Right, and the name Brooklyn carries a lot of weight, and suddenly, you know, they're selling cases hand over fist, basically as quick as they can ship them to Europe. And that was a really wonderful thing for a lot of these craft distillers.
It was.
Because
and now
it was a whole new
screeching
world.
Halt.
Yeah, I mean, the tariffs, you know, it's a really bad thing because the price was already expensive.
Yeah.
And now, if you add the tariff, I mean.
No, they're not going to sell anything.
Basically, you know, a bottle that sells here that's not that expensive is now suddenly competing against some of the world's most expensive spirits in Europe. And it's just not a fair fight.
It's not a fair fight.
And that's not what they're supposed to be.
No. We're gonna see a shakeout for sure, and some of the good people are gonna lose some of the good people, some of the people who've done everything right. But we're also gonna see who the survivors are.
And I think that breathing room, and we saw that we've seen this with beer now several times, and some of those,
and we've lost some of my favorite breweries. Yeah. You know, I miss Smutty Nose a lot.
But that kind of room in the market allows like some real deal players like our friend Garrett Oliver at the Brooklyn Brewery to grow into like not just a small business but to a very large business where they're, you know, a national business or Dogfish Head or others, and that it would never have happened if, you know, all like, you know, 10,000
I mean, 20 years from now, one or another of these small distilleries we talk about is going to be as big as Jim Beam.
Yeah.
You know? Probably. I mean, that's a given.
Yeah.
I mean, it will happen. It's just a question of who.
Yeah.
It's probably more than one, too.
And what will they be making?
What will they be making, exactly?
I really don't see a slowdown in terms of spirits, knock on wood.
Certainly not here in America.
No. I mean, I think, if anything, we've just scratched the surface, to be honest, and you know, whiskey drinking, we think everybody drinks whiskey now. Go back to, like, the 60s.
Everybody drank whiskey.
Really, everybody did. It was twice as big. Yeah. You know, and I think 1970 is the high water mark.
Yeah.
Literally, almost exactly twice as much whiskey is being sold as it was in last few years. So, we still have plenty of room to
grow. I mean, it's really, there's a lot of flabbiness in the commodity beer market too, and that's still a balloon where the air is slowly leaking out.
Absolutely.
And it's going to continue to leak out. I think.
I mean, I think the writing is on the wall.
Yeah, they took care of business. They didn't take care of beer making.
Yeah,
and it's going to really
it's
hurting them.
And I think we saw a little bit of that in the spirits business as times were bad, but most of that hasn't really, you know, has been corrected, or it didn't stick, or those brands went out of business. So the beer market is being replaced by things like spiked seltzer, which I don't think needs to exist, and, you know, all types of weird drinks and combinations of alcohol and, you know, basically every type of soft drink.
You know, cider, which hasn't been a factor commercially in America in 150 years.
Right.
You know,
coming on strong.
Is coming on strong. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Maybe more than 150 years.
Yeah. You know, you're right.
Since the Germans got here in the 1840s, really, and brought us lager beer, which I'm unfortunately not a cider drinker. So I think the lager beer was a good introduction to America.
We're more a fan of the rye whiskey than perhaps they brought.
The rye whiskey I like.
Definitely a lot to look forward to in 2019. We'll raise our glasses.
Clink, clink.
Happy New Year, I guess.
Happy New Year.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.